Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 237.
This week on the podcast, everyone suffers under Trump's first budget proposal, even John Mulvaney, who is now living in a horrifying world without business cards.
And as they say in Trump's favorite Irish proverb, freedom's just another word for tragically dying of a preventable disease.
Germany is no longer fascist enough for a handshake from Donald Trump.
And we might be going to war with North Korea, but don't worry, Rex Tillerson isn't losing sleep over it.
Plus, even Fox News discovers that the only thing more popular than Planned Parenthood is Bernie Sanders.
And confirmed, it's fine to pull a gun on your coworker at Fox News. Still seeking comment on whether the policy allows actual shots to be fired.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com. And today we have another special guest on the podcast. 2 weeks ago, we had my mother, Carla.
Uh-huh.
Now we have my father, Andy.
I'm loving this. It's so good.
The parents are just making their way through.
Yeah.
Parents
I'm popular.
Weekend. I'm Holly.
I know,
it has
right?
been Parents Weekend in LA this week. At my
really?
Job, everyone's parents were there inexplicably.
Oh,
it's like everyone coordinated somehow.
And well, then a lot of people spring break. It's
yeah,
like
that's,
parents
that's
spring
why
parents
my dad's
are still celebrating spring break too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Uh-huh. No, because we noticed a lot of people, like, we passed a long line at Hamburger Mary's. For example,
oh, sure.
More parents than you would have guessed in that line. And I was like, this is a weird
parents
place
like
to take
drag
your parents.
Queens.
I mean, that's true. Everyone likes drag queens, I guess.
They do.
But, you know, we didn't go the drag queen route this weekend. I didn't know that that's what we were all doing. But
no,
I'm sorry, LA. I hadn't heard.
You had an IKEA trip to make.
Yeah, I had to make another IKEA trip.
And they didn't get the memo.
No, we didn't find out in time.
Yeah.
But so in any case, this week we had the joy of experiencing Trump's first budget proposal.
We did.
But first, tomorrow is the Gorsuch hearing.
Yes.
So we're not going to have any reporting on that because it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah.
But just
we're
know.
We're good, but we're not that good.
Just know that that's coming next week. And then also that hilariously, people are now angry about Gorsuch's church.
Yeah.
Which is, as it turns out, the same church that Brent goes to.
Yeah, I didn't even realize this.
Not the
you
same
just,
physical
you just
church.
Right, yeah. I know.
But
yeah,
the reason they're
I
angry,
see him every Sunday.
Right. The reason they're angry is because it's
the gays can go right.
His gays
right.
can go to this church.
Yeah, exactly.
They're angry because he's Episcopalian, and then suddenly someone discovered that he hasn't renounced
I was gonna
gayness
say,
in all of its forms, and
right.
so he is now on the shit list at the far
like
right.
If you're,
again.
If you're going to be a Republican Supreme Court nominee, you need to be going to like a real like born again evangelical like you know loony.
Yeah,
Bible
you gotta
beating
go to a loony
place,
church.
And that's
I think
not
loony
they,
church is the best
sure,
way
enough.
That we could describe
it. And the Episcopalians are not.
They're not them.
They're not them.
No. But so, in any case, that was the scandal that broke this weekend in
big,
regards
big scandal.
To Gorsuch. And then the other thing that you should do before we start is, I mean, after you've listened to this, but right. before we start, we should mention that you should read the article about the Mercers that came out this week. The Mercers, and Rebecca Mercer specifically, are these sort of... They're the Koch brothers of Donald Trump, but they are so much more than that and also creepier than that and like weirder than that. They're like, they're much more kind of doctrinaire than the Koch. You know, the Koch brothers just kind of want to make money.
I was going to say, the Koch brothers sometimes accidentally stumble upon something that, you know,
is,
we
is,
would accidentally agree with.
Patently evil.
Right,
right,
exactly.
Yeah, no,
yes.
and that's, I think, you know, Sheldon Adelson is... Another one of these people that, like, just don't... Ultimately, he wants two things. He wants to make money, and he wants to move the U.S.
Embassy
in
Israel
from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem.
Right.
But that's... But those his
that's
agenda
it.
Generally makes sense to his own needs.
Right.
These people are, like, ideologues, and they have, like, their sort of own doctrine that involves, like, getting rid of immigrants and...
Sure.
A number of other things.
Trump's
that are
doctrines.
Trump's doctrines.
Right. It's where he's getting them from.
Exactly. And so they had initially gone in for Ted Cruz. And then they had a falling out with Ted Cruz.
Oh,
and then
boy.
They're friends with Steve Bannon. And so they ended up
obviously.
In Trump's camp.
Yeah.
They own Breitbart.
The falling out with Ted Cruz was that he lost.
No, the falling out. But then they
well,
also had
not,
a falling out because they had demanded he use their data operation. And their data operation was shitty. And so his campaign was refusing to pay them. And then... When he finally did pay them, started shit-talking the results they were getting. And so, because they had some data operation that was doing, like, psychological profiling on people.
No.
Because they are big hedge fund people. And so the sort of patriarch of this family is, like, a math genius. But he's, like, obviously a math genius who lacks other kinds of understanding and awareness.
Right. Politically, you have to know how to put the math genius to work.
Yes.
Just being the math genius doesn't solve the problem.
But so he had been, they had invested in this company that was like supposedly going to be psychologically profiling people so they could find out what kind of messaging would work on them and who was ripe for a change of party and all this stuff.
Sure.
And instead they got bullshit results that the Cruz campaign was like, fuck you. We just paid you millions of dollars for this bullshit. Like our own list is better than this. And so they, and they hadn't subscribed to the like Republican Party list in the first place. So like they didn't even know who was on the list.
Oh, no.
So in any case, there was a falling out. Steve Bannon brought them into Trump's camp. And then she took a fairly active, she was on his transition team and she took a fairly active role in his transition. She's somebody with no real experience in government who's like an ideologue crazy person who has never not gotten exactly what she wants because her father is like a billionaire.
Right.
And she has grown up in the lap of luxury just doing nothing. Her like... her last
like
career, she owned a bakery as her her one and only career choice. So in any case, it's fascinating reading. We posted it on our Facebook page and you should definitely check it out because it paints a concerning world about the kind of people that Trump is surrounding himself with. And I know that you're already concerned about this if you are a thinking person.
Right.
But
if you're
you should
already,
know what you're concerned about.
If you're already concerned to the point of like being on the verge, then maybe don't read it.
Right.
But
also, if you're not fully on the verge, you'll be on the verge when you finish
when
reading
done.
This. Good news, she's had a falling out with him since.
Oh, good.
So she's disappeared for now.
Sure.
But nobody knows.
Yeah.
In any case, this week was Trump's first budget proposal.
Yeah.
Now, if you're thinking, good for him, he got a budget proposal in, you should know that his 53-page budget proposal, this is called a skinny budget because it's like the first presidential budget proposal. It has no context. Or
And it's just broad ideas. It's going to go to Congress and they're going to redo the whole
they're
thing,
They're
going to
be basically. Like, fuck
it's
this.
It's nothing.
We would like to get elected again.
Right.
But his skinny budget, which he released this week, was 53 pages.
Mm-hmm.
President Obama's skinny budget was 140 pages. Mm-hmm. George Bush's was 175, and both of them got them to Congress before the end of February.
Sure.
So he's both late and lazy.
It was like baby's first budget.
Yeah.
You know?
Literally.
Yes.
He's never, ever looked at or done a budget. So that helps.
Which is interesting since he's who he is.
Yeah, it's not that it's not that interesting when you think about what his role has been in who he is.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, agreed.
They dubbed the budget America First, because they would like to continue this like racist witch hunt language.
Yeah.
It increases defense spending by $54 billion, but it makes cuts to literally
everything
that you love and enjoy.
Right.
It's like the worst budget and the cruelest budget that's ever been thought of by human beings.
Yeah.
It, you know, like we said, there's a more detailed proposal coming. That'll come in May, their budget director said. But on a general note, one thing that's notable about this before we talk about the details is that in 2011, Congress created a compromise that would impose across-the-board sequestrations that were equal for defense and non-defense spending.
God, we're still living in a
world. Remember
I do remember.
Remember the deal that they struck that has allowed Congress to move forward?
Remember when
we
told them all via a blog post of ours that they could just quit it with the sequester if they wanted to?
Yeah, I do remember that.
Yeah, mine too.
And that was because in 2012 we were still talking about sequesters because it took forever for any of this to work out.
Yeah.
But this proposal basically destroys any adherence to that agreement. And that probably means that there are going to be some hardball tactics in response to it, I'm hoping, from both sides.
Yeah.
And that could be exciting. Or it could be terrible. The world could end. We don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
We might be at war with North Korea before that starts, so nobody knows. In any case, here are some things that the Trump budget will
increase
funding for.
Yes.
Because there are some increases in here.
Sure.
Military spending for personnel, munitions, ships, and fighters for all those wars that we started. School choice programs.
Oh,
it's going to increase funding for school choice and charter school programs so that we can decrease the amount of education available to people.
Good.
Interestingly, the one not horrible thing that it increases funding for is opiate abuse. That's because communities that voted for Trump are suffering a horrible heroin OD epidemic.
Yes.
That is basically destroying much of rural America.
Yeah.
And it's something that truly people in cities are, it's like one of those things, somebody likened it to AIDS, where it was like a thing that like one part of the country was being decimated by.
And we have no,
if you didn't know gay
no
people during the AIDS
it.
Crisis, you didn't know anyone who it was affecting. Like we have no, I don't know anyone who has been affected by the opioid. Can't even say the word.
Right.
I don't have that much practice, but I mean, but so it increases funding by $500 million.
Well, he had to give them something in this budget because he just
took
all
away everything
of their, and the week prior he had taken away their health care.
Exactly.
So, I mean,
yeah, he
had to throw him a little bone.
So that's the bone that his own voters got thrown.
Yeah.
But it also adds $2.6 billion for the wall.
Oh, yes.
Which, how did it's literally throwing it into...
It's a hole in the ground that they're going to throw that money into.
Yeah. It's like the holiday hole of Cards of Humanity fame.
Uh-huh.
And then $314 million for immigration enforcement agents, because the budget proposes hiring 1,500 new ICE agents, 60 more prosecutors to back them up, 40 new deputy U.S. marshals focused on criminal immigrants. You know how he fake thinks that's a problem.
Yeah.
20 attorneys to defend his own immigration executive actions.
Right.
Well, you know, that's us paying for him to defend his own idiocy.
He had to hire all of these new ICE agents to offset the firings in the EPA.
Exactly. Yeah. Someone needs jobs.
Right. Because that's one of the things that they're cutting. It's like a quarter of the jobs of the EPA.
They're cutting a quarter of the jobs because they're getting rid of a lot of agencies, too.
Right. Yeah.
A lot of jobs disappearing.
Yeah.
And then... he's also going to propose hiring 20 more agents to handle land acquisition for the border wall.
Jesus.
It's like the most horrible. Here are things that the budget will cut, though. A bunch of agencies that deal with the arts, public broadcasting, and legal aid would be cut entirely.
Yes.
As would community development block grants, community learning centers, low-income heating assistance. That's nice. So we're just going to let all of our elderly people freeze to death and all of our poor children freeze to death because... we, like, don't have a heart at all.
Yeah.
If we don't let them starve.
Yeah, well, they're going to starve or die of preventable disease first, so it'd be fine. But it's interesting because the budget places a really heavy emphasis on measurable results. And it says that specifically about the heating program, the document says that the heating program has been, quote, unable to demonstrate strong performance outcomes. What kind of outcomes are they looking for, like, numerically, like, in terms of these heating assistance programs?
Right. Like, if the money was going to people to reimburse them for heating, then that's the...
then their continued existence is a success.
Exactly, yes.
And then with the community development block grants, it says it's, quote, not, quote, well-targeted to the poorest populations and has not demonstrated results.
So let's just kill it then.
Time and again, by the way, we've shown that those block grants have had great results. And then also, you know, the big sort of like symbolic boogeyman that came out of this was Meals on Wheels, which we're going to talk about in a second. And that's funded partially through those block grants. So it has a lot of fallout for programs that might actually like impact your everyday life if you are a person in any sort of need or live in a community. I don't know.
Right.
Maybe you do. Maybe you don't. I can't speak for everyone, but most of us live in communities. It eliminates programs that support first-time homebuyers, affordable housing initiatives at the state and local level, neighborhood revitalization programs. Mm-hmm. It eliminates a job training program for seniors because, quote, only half successfully transition to unsubsidized employment and a third don't finish. But you know what? That's 66% of them leave there with a job that they can pay bills with so that you don't have to claim that they're being lazy and don't deserve the care that we, you know, don't deserve the care that we provide for the elderly. Like,
and now these people who, now,
like
that, now that, and now that 66% of people, are now going to go back to their lives and need social services that they aren't going to get either. So.
Yeah, no, it's a catch 22. And this is, you know, this is for grandma. Like, this is for your grandparents.
Yes.
Or your parents if you're an adult.
Sure.
You know, can't speak for everyone. Yeah. But in any case, and then, as Brent alluded to, it cuts 20% of the EPA's workforce and cuts $400 million from regional projects, including the restoration of the Great Lakes and the Chesapeake Bay.
Yeah.
And then it says it, quote, returns the responsibility for local environmental initiatives to state and local entities. So it means that people living near the Great Lakes, I guess, suddenly have to pay to restore the Great Lakes, even though the rest of us get to enjoy them because they are like a national treasure.
Right. Right.
I don't know. But
I
know what that's like. You live in a major tourist location, you end up paying enough so that other people can enjoy shit.
Yeah.
You don't need to also pay so that private corporations can't pollute your water and then you have to fucking pay to clean it up.
Right.
Come on.
Oh,
anyways,
boy.
Meals on Wheels became this sort of symbolic center of this debate, which is interesting because that's not a federal program. And so there was an initial backlash that was like, they don't get, like, there's nothing about Meals on Wheels in the budget. So, like, that's a problem. It was because Keith Ellison had tweeted that Trump was calling for the elimination of Meals on Wheels. And then the Congressional Progressive Caucus dubbed his budget the starvation budget, which is kind of clever.
Mm-hmm.
But here is the deal with why this will be a problem for Meals on Wheels. I mean, it was another one of those things where they got called out as a target and then suddenly everyone privately donated zillions of dollars. Their donations went up massively.
Yeah.
But that's not a sustainable strategy. And Trump's budget, as we said, calls for cutting community development block grants, which is a program that many Meals on Wheels groups rely on for their funding. And then a majority of Wheels on Meals, Meals on Wheels programs get their federal funding through a DHHS agency called the Administration for Community Living that serves the elderly and disabled, because they have a line item for home-delivered nutrition services. These programs are massively popular, even on a legislative level. The last time that these programs were authorized by the Older Americans Act, and no one voted against it the last time that it passed, and I think it was fairly recently. The impact will vary from place to place, but it won't be good.
No, it won't be good. And this is the reason that it's so popular is because, I mean, how couldn't it be? But I mean, I saw an interesting interview with, I think it was CBS News or something, had like one of their anchors had gone out with someone who was delivering Meals on Wheels, sort of like as part of this whole, you know, brouhaha over Meals on Wheels, and talked to some of the people who were receiving them. And of course, many of them had voted for Trump and were horrified.
Yeah.
That this was a part of the budget.
Exactly.
And, like, I think that that is ultimately what will probably maybe get some of this funding back into the budget. Because I don't think
so.
That
I mean, I don't think people, you know, when you say community development block grants, like, no one knows what the hell that's
about. No, but people do know what Meals on Wheels are. So that's why I think it was smart that
they
sort of tied.
They know which programs those grants fund.
I mean, it's good messaging on the Democrats' part, which is sometimes not always there.
Well, but it also draws a connection between, like, there are things that won't be specifically named in this budget that still lose out.
Yeah.
And if you're wondering who's losing out, it's not just poor and elderly Americans.
No.
Mulvaney himself is feeling pretty sad about the situation.
Yeah.
He was on Face the Nation today and agreed that he knew the bill was going to hurt children and prevent them from having access to food and stuff. But he's suffering also because they are making him pay for his own business cards. And that, because of that, he doesn't have them. Can you imagine living in a world where you do not have access to business cards unless you agree to pay for them, as you can do because you have a pretty well-paid full-time job?
I can't imagine that world, but I can't imagine a world wherein not have food.
Yeah. I know. It's so interesting how people's imaginations work differently.
It really is. Yes.
So different. Meanwhile, people still hate Trump care.
Yes, they
everywhere.
Do. Yes,
on all sides of the aisle, on all planets.
Everyone,
the whole universe hates Trump care.
That's right.
Sean Spicer did another prop press conference this week, where he said that we know that the AHCA is good because it's so short. He showed the Affordable Care Act and the ACHA next to each other and asked us which one was shorter.
Right,
and then. The one that's shorter, obviously that implied that it was better.
Yes. Well, this is the thing the Republicans love to talk about with the ACA because they always
complicated.
Also,
they're so many...
complicated. And also they love to talk about like that quote, you know, like who I can't remember who was that said it, but like, we're going to have to pass it to find out fully what's in it or something like that, which was obviously a dumb thing to
don't
say
that. If
don't
you're,
say that. But they're honestly saying something very similar right now in the sense that like, we're going to fix it later, but we still have to vote on it.
We have to vote on it
we
now.
We have to vote on it now.
Before the CBO's course are in, and we'll fix it later.
And then we'll fix it later. So they're basically doing the same thing. So
my favorite thing about this moment was that John Oliver then reported that 6 pages of the very short AHCA bill are dedicated to what to do in the event that somebody who receives subsidies wins the lottery.
Well, it's a complicated issue.
And affects a lot of people.
Who knew it was going to be such a complicated issue?
Not
winning the lottery.
That's one I would agree. I wouldn't have guessed.
Right.
guessed at all.
Right.
So in any case, Paul Ryan is demanding. He's saying, no, we're going to make changes to it. But he's demanding that they keep this vote on Thursday, which is so crazy. The CBO score is not going to be back in time. So he's asking his members to vote before they know how it's going to affect their constituents.
Right. Well, the longer this thing goes unvoted on, the longer it starts to smell rotten. You know, so it's
also, like... he said that we just want to remind everyone that back in 2009, he demanded a CBO score for the Affordable Care Act even before it was marked up.
Like what?
Yeah. I mean, that's what's going on in his brain usually. Yeah. So it's a little confusing. Yeah. In any case, Ted Cruz was at Mar-a-Lago this weekend to talk about it with
Trump. He's going to fix everything, guys.
He's on the case. What a hero. What a national treasure, that Ted Cruz.
Yeah.
They're basically rewriting it for the far right so they can get those votes because that's where the Republican pushback is coming from.
Right.
But Susan Collins also came out against
it,
so it's coming from the center, too.
Well, that's the thing. We actually had, and I can't remember who the three are now, but there are three Republicans who are on record as not going to vote for it.
Yeah.
Now, they might be able to fix, if they're rewriting it for the far right, they might be able to fix some of the things for Rand Paul, but probably not, just because I think that he is sort of like against any sort of healthcare plan that the government is offering that on any level. So
yeah, I don't think that he can.
But there's now three, and that's all they need. That gets them down to 49, and Mike Pence can't come in and save them at that point if there's three of them that are against it. So like the House might pass it. The House is crazy.
Yeah. And this is the kind of legislation that I think probably a lot of people who are going to vote for it are going to be thankful that somebody is voting against it. You know?
Yeah,
I think that there are at least 10 senators who are Republicans from purple states who are going to be pretty happy
when the
thing goes down.
But they might vote for it.
They might vote for it. I feel like that's kind of John McCain's role in everything at this point. Yes. Like, I feel like he's not going to step up.
No.
Because he doesn't step up. But he is going to, you know, he's going to be happy that someone else stepped up.
Yeah.
But so in any case, Jim Brewer also came out against it. A lot of purple state governors coming out against this.
Yeah.
A lot of that
she's
going
not,
on.
Well, she's not the governor anymore anyway. No. She's not even from a purple state.
No.
Think they took the Medicaid. I don't even think.
Isn't she from Arizona?
Yeah.
That's a purple state-ish. It's a future purple state.
Future purple
state. It's a would-be purple state.
Right. Yes.
It's like on its way to being a purple state.
Sure. All right. Fair enough.
I don't think they took the money, though.
Yeah,
they did.
That's why I'm surprised that she came out.
No,
I don't think
they did, because there's nothing but elderly people in that state. I think that they did take the money there.
All right.
We don't fact check us.
Yeah.
We don't know.
we
can't remember. We don't care about Arizona that much, apparently.
Yeah.
But also, Chris Wallace grilled Paul Ryan about it on Fox this week. He said the CBO estimate... He was quoting the CBO estimate that came out last week that said that a 64-year-old making less than $27,000 a year would pay $14,600 a year for health insurance under this plan instead of
$1,700.
And said, what they're saying is that this isn't freedom. This isn't people voluntarily deciding not to have health insurance. It's your plan makes it unaffordable for people.
Right.
And Paul Ryan was like, well, we're going to address that and whatever. But like, he has no actual details on how they're going to address that. So that's been... a disaster.
Oh, man.
And I'm curious to see whether this vote happens and what happens at this vote.
I know. Me too.
They're hypocrites, so like whatever. But like they are a kind of hypocrite that I think will not serve them well.
Well, what's going to happen is
don't they want their jobs?
But here's the thing. If the House votes on it and there are not 50 votes for it in the Senate is not even going to vote.
They're not
going to
touch it.
So what's probably going to happen is
it'll
this
pass
thing
that,
is,
it'll be like it'll, repealing
it'll
Obamacare.
Exactly. It'll pass in the House and then will never be thought of again until maybe it's fixed enough to get like at least one more vote in the Senate. But none of the people who are voting against it in the Senate are voting against it on reasons that Ted Cruz would be fixing right
exactly.
now.
Exactly. Right.
So, you know,
the Senate
they're coming from like the Rand Paul,
the
like wherever
crazy.
God knows where he is about it. To
or the Susan Collins.
To the people who are like, huh?
I'm not going
to
let my entire state not have health insurance
over some
ideological dumbness that no one can solve.
Right, exactly.
In any case, this was also a banner week for fucking up foreign relations related things.
Oh, my God. Seriously.
So, first of all, another big defeat for Trump. His second immigration ban was slapped down, like, just before it was supposed to go into effect, which is hilarious.
Yeah.
This was his revised ban that removed Iraq from the list of banned nations and was going to allow green card and visa holders to come. But a federal judge in Hawaii issued a temporary nationwide block because the bill is very clearly meant to prevent Muslims. Like,
that's the thing.
Discriminatory... sort of nature of its intent.
Yes, and that's what they
obvious to all.
And that's what I think is so amazing about this ruling, because we talked last week about some of the reasons that both Hawaii and Washington brought the suit, because they both brought it for sort of different reasons.
Right.
And this ruling is fascinating to me because they're basically using Trump's previous words on the ban against him, because nowhere in this ban as written now says anything about like Muslim nations or anything like that, obviously.
But because, he's
like,
been very clear.
But he, in the past, has said...
Yeah.
He has called it that. The intention. And so they're basically saying it says in the Constitution that you cannot show preferential treatment to entry in the country to...
people of very different
religions.
Faiths.
Yeah, of different religions. So it's like, just because it doesn't say this on this particular document that the court is looking at right now, doesn't mean we can't bring up the tape... of a hundred times of you talking about keeping Muslims out of the country.
Does it mean that the fact that you've declared this is your intention and the intention of this policy repeatedly for a year
exactly.
now,
yes.
like, is somehow erased from brains.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, that's not how... Yeah. I mean, I guess they thought maybe that was how government worked, but it's apparently not, perhaps. Which is fascinating.
Yeah.
Then we moved on to Germany.
Yes.
There was a big St. Patrick's Day event at the White House. Lots of excitement. And Angela Merkel was also there visiting on St. Patrick's Day and did a photo op with Trump.
Yes.
That was a very uncomfortable photo op.
Certainly uncomfortable.
She, at a certain point, suggested that her and Trump shake hands, and Trump just, like, didn't respond.
Yeah.
People suggested maybe he didn't hear her.
Maybe he didn't hear it, yes.
Maybe he just thought she had cooties. Nobody will ever know.
No.
But it was a very awkward moment for all. He just sort of keeps posing for photographs.
Yeah.
As she's, like,
both sitting
out
in the chair.
There about to share.
Yeah.
I have a theory, which is that he didn't want to have to pull his crazy handshake move on a woman.
Oh.
So he just pretended he couldn't, wasn't understanding what was
going
on.
Well, she wouldn't have allowed that for 1 second.
No, I would not try that move on Angela Merkel.
She might have tried it on him successfully.
The woman is from East Germany. She's a Russian and a German. It's That's a dangerous combo to be trying your dumb handshake on.
Seriously.
Your crazy Yank handshake.
Yeah.
But so he was critical of her he's been critical of her recently for letting refugees enter Germany earlier this year. But his travel ban. It wasn't the greatest visit. Say it.
Because there was also, he had a real laugh line at the actual press conference where he was like, oh, we've both been, we have one thing in common. We both, the blast administration, both wiretapped us or whatever.
Exactly. We're going to talk about that when we talk about the wiretapping because we also pissed them off Great Britain this week too.
But it was also like,
exciting visit from the Irish prime minister. Yeah. Who basically, trolled Donald Trump right in front of him.
That was the best. You may have seen this because it was making the rounds on the interwebs. But it was so good. Like, he basically, he quotes the poem on the Statue of Liberty about how the Irish were the, wretched refuse on your teeming shore.
Right.
And, it was so good. Because he was talking about St. Patrick being an immigrant.
Right.
And it was
into this tale of the history of Irish immigrants in America and the importance of being open to immigrants.
And Trump is standing right there. It's at their press conference. Idiot. I mean, somebody did a good edit of, that his words about that and cutting away to, awkward glances that Trump is making, which I'm sure probably have nothing to do with each other. But it's that's funny. Watch that version.
Comedy doesn't have to be true to be funny.
It doesn't. It sure doesn't.
But so, in any case, that was a great moment. The other thing that we did this week was thoroughly piss off Great Britain in a way that is ridiculous and unnecessary, but also pretty unprecedented in terms of its craziness.
Yeah.
So, you know how Trump is going around saying he was wiretapped based on a story he casually overheard from Fox News.
Or not wiretapped because wiretapped was in quotes.
Right.
So maybe he just
surveilled. He was, quote, wiretapped.
Right. Yes, exactly. Uh-huh.
Yeah, He later claimed that by putting it in quotes, which usually would identify that's the exact word you're talking about, he somehow meant something along the lines of
wiretapping. They've talked their way around this
so many times.
I mean, Kellyanne Conway suggested that, he was being wiretapped through his microwave. So, let's...
Right. Or that we all are.
Or that we all are, but yes.
But
she is, and that's why she's wearing
that. Yes, exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But so in any case, Trump provoked a kind of bizarre public dispute with Great Britain by claiming that they had secretly eavesdropped on him at the behest of Obama.
Yes.
This
that
week.
They were doing his dirty work. That
For
the,
him.
Right. And he even named the British intelligence agency that was doing so.
Right.
Which apparently you just don't speak of.
Right. It's one of those British intelligence agencies that nobody talks about.
Right. Yeah.
But so anyway, at a briefing on Thursday, Sean Spicer reads from a bunch of news clippings that are supposed to support this claim.
Yes.
And asserts that Andrew Napolitano, who's a Fox News commentator that no one gives a shit about, says that Obama used this British government, the GCHQ, the British Government Communications Headquarters, to spy on Trump. So the British officials are livid.
Yes.
And they adamantly deny this. They call their, they call their equivalents at the American State Department and are like, fuck
Stop
all of
you.
This. First
this
of all,
never, be
never say
again.
This again and also take it back.
Right.
So everyone's
sort of kind of not
sorta,
really at all did.
So they kind of take it back. But then Trump refuses to back down. And that's during his press conference with Angela Merkel makes this comment about how both she and him know what it's like to be spied on.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, the quote was, but then he also says that we had nothing to do with claiming this. It was a Fox News commentator who says it. He says, we said nothing. All we did was quote a certain very talented legal mind who was the one responsible for saying that on television. I didn't make an opinion on it. You shouldn't be talking to me. You should be talking to Fox.
Yeah.
So, and then, you know, then he tries to make this joke with Angela Merkel. Then Fox disavows the report themselves, saying Fox News cannot confirm Judge Napolitano's commentary. Fox News knows of no evidence of any kind that the now president of the United States was surveilled at any time, anyway, full stop. Which is the greatest.
Yeah.
But this was like, it added a lot of chaos to the St. Patrick's Day festivities that were going on. Because as this is going on, the British ambassador is raising the matter with Sean Spicer at the St. Patrick's Day reception in Washington. The national security advisor to Theresa May contacts H.R. McMaster.
Oh, God.
They panicked every person who works in foreign affairs, since we're supposed to be such best friends with Britain. And
our special relationship.
And they thought that that awkward hand-holding visit with Theresa May had cemented our great bond. And even the GCHQ, which normally doesn't exist, commented. Because they were just like, fuck all of this.
Yeah.
But so in any case, the best quote I read about this was from the end of the New York Times article about it, which was, it was from a former State Department official who works at the European Council on Foreign Relations in London. And he said of Trump, it's very easy to have a good meeting with Mr. Trump. He's very pleasant in the room. He'll promise you the world. And 48 hours later, he'll betray you without a thought. He won't even know he's betraying you. I feel like that kind of perfectly encompasses every Trump scandal.
It does. Right? Yeah. Yeah, well, he's a buffoon. So he doesn't know. He doesn't know. He smiles and nods while you're there.
He wants to be liked. So he'll tell you what you want to hear. Yeah. When you're the president of Mexico, he will not tell you you're paying for the wall because he's afraid of you.
Right.
And then he'll tell his friends on the other side of the border that he does want you to pay for the wall because he wants to be liked by them as well.
Yeah.
He'll tell you, the person who needs healthcare, that you'll definitely have healthcare.
Right.
Then he'll tell his friends who want to cut healthcare that you definitely don't need healthcare. He doesn't know. He's just blowing with the wind.
Yeah.
He's an empty vessel being filled up by the last person to speak to him, which is too often that person is Steve Bannon.
I know. It needs to stop being Steve Bannon.
I know. Okay. So in any case, then there was also Rex Tillerson's tour to Asia.
Went on his big three-country adventure
to Asia where he
with
seemed...
With one right-wing media person covering him.
He didn't
take the press pool.
Well, he said that the plane goes faster if it has less pressure.
Ah, yes. You know how the plane speed can be so important in these situations.
Yeah. It's the weight of the press pool.
Well, the weight of the truth is definitely bringing this whole administration down, I think. But
so true. Because, this was the first time that the Secretary of State has gone on a trip like this and not taken the press pool. And then, in addition to that, only take a right-wing blogger with you seems extra weird. But okay.
Yes, it does.
Somehow
we've still found out that all he's doing is napping.
Yeah. So in between his dire warnings about how we're about to go to war with
North Korea,
he seems to be mostly catching up on sleep.
Yes.
He had a meeting, a 2.5-hour meeting with the Japanese foreign minister while he was in Tokyo, and a 1-hour meeting with Shinzo Abe. Then he got to Korea, and he was tired by then.
Yeah.
So he cut his schedule short, had a joint press conference with their foreign minister, met with the acting president briefly for an hour, and then bailed out of the lunch and dinner with his Korean counterparts because of fatigue. And if you thought fatigue was just, this, you know, maybe he's sick, maybe he's tired.
Right.
This isn't really the first time that his need for a nap has made the news. Because he also skipped out on a meeting between Trump and Netanyahu so that he could leave early for a trip to Germany and get a good night's sleep before a big meeting.
Yeah.
So...
And he left that like to his deputy or something.
Yeah, he left that
between
to his
the president,
deputy,
and,
the president,
and the Israeli prime minister.
That's an important one.
Like, go to that.
Go to that. Yeah, if it's the president and the the foreign minister of like a country you've never heard of, then I don't know, but don't with a volatile country that we're supposedly such best friends with, like Israel. Like, go to that meeting.
Yes.
Trump needs a babysitter. But what's hilarious also is
he had probably had Jared Kushner there as his babysitter, if I had to guess.
And also, the acting deputy that he left was an Obama appointee because they hadn't replaced him yet. He's one of the people that they keep complaining about, but they don't actually replace.
Right.
They can't find anyone.
Yeah.
Wonkette hilariously said, maybe Trump should have looked for a Secretary of State who had some energy and stamina. Huh?
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Remember how important energy and stamina is?
Yes, I do.
In any case, so he was mostly napping until he got to Friday.
Right.
And that's when he announced we're probably going to war with North Korea.
Perfect.
He made a brief reprieve from his napping schedule so that he could announce that we're about to go to war.
Yeah.
This is while he was still in Seoul. He basically ruled out any opening of a negotiation with North Korea to, like, freeze its nuclear programs, even if it's just sort of meant as a temporary stopgap to make them stop testing. And that's the only – that strategy has sort of been the only thing that anyone can think – I mean, there's no good options here. But that's the only program that anyone thinks might be even a little effective, because an Obama administration intelligence report basically said that, like, this is the only thing that Kim Jong-un thinks can make him a player.
Right.
So and keep his regime stable.
Right.
Is having nuclear capabilities. Yeah. So he has no reason that he would give up this program.
No.
They already don't have any aid from anyone. It's not like we can cut them off.
Yeah.
That's
what a lot of people have been saying, because, like, you know, for a while we were sort of like, we'll have the Chinese sanctioned. Pressure them and we'll do this or that. But
they're
it's
not
sort of like
do that.
They would. Yeah. I mean.
He said for the first time on this at this Friday press conference that the Trump administration might be forced to take preemptive action if they, quote, elevate the threat of their weapons program to an unacceptable level.
And he said
level.
Specifically that military options were on the table. Yes.
Yeah. So this is terrible news, because we all know that this is a distraction tactic that they're eventually going to need, because everything else has hit the fan in every other possible way for a while now.
Yeah.
This was sort of his first trip where he made any sort of consistent foreign policy, because he's been mostly napping at home since he got appointed Secretary of State.
Yeah.
He hasn't been up to much.
Yeah.
He's not there were all those articles just a few weeks ago being like, where in the world is Rex Tillerson?
I know.
It was nowhere.
Yeah.
Because he's not been anywhere.
Yeah.
But he was trying to walk back, I think, doubts that Trump was committed to helping in that situation, because Trump had been threatening to pull troops back from the Pacific, and specifically North Korea, South Korea, and Japan, until they paid a greater share of the cost of keeping them there. That was part of his threats to gut NATO and do all of, you know, remember when he's going to pull back all of our funding from everywhere because he doesn't understand how the world is?
Yeah.
People think that maybe part of his sort of like militant tone was about reassuring everyone that we have a commitment to staying involved there.
Right.
But it was a little alarming to hear that there were no tactics on the table that won't involve military action.
Right, exactly. Well, I think that on some level, like, while that is scary, I think it also makes a little bit of sense, because I think that the only way that, I mean, sure, you don't want North Korea to have nuclear weapons, and I get that, and you certainly don't want them that could get here, and they already have ones that can reach allies in the region, you know?
Right.
I mean, Japan is close, South Korea, obviously, but, like, I think the fear of Kim Jong-un may have that we may attack, I think, could be potentially the only thing. This is one time where, like, Trump being sort of like a wild card on foreign policy, like,
could
I think
work in our favor, because Kim Jong-un is
the
wild card.
Could potentially work in our favor. Like, I think it's usually better to have, like, a foreign policy doctrine. Like,
yes.
But we certainly don't, and that is a little scary. But, I mean, in this scenario, it sort of almost makes sense to me.
I will say one thing, which is that us doing any sort of military intervention in North Korea will confirm everything they've ever been told propaganda-wise about what we're up to. And that, I think that would be kind of like, you know how, like, we didn't win Vietnam because we just didn't fucking understand what was going on?
Right.
And Vietnamese people were fucking everywhere doing whatever they could to get us out of their country?
Yeah.
I think that would be a similar kind of deal. The entire country has literally been preparing for this moment since people's whole lives have passed not having this happen, where they've done nothing but prepare every single day for the imperialists to attack.
Yeah.
Like, it's like a national obsession
of course.
There. I feel like it just
And
like,
I'm definitely not saying that we should do it by any stretch
saying,
of
like,
the imagination.
This
but,
kind of talk, like, I feel like with North Korea, it's the best thing that you can do there is delay.
Right.
Delay everything.
Right.
Because they have this idiot kid running things. Who knows how long he'll last? He's a nutbag, similar to Trump.
Yeah.
You know, and people can only be stretched so far. His father and his grandfather were slightly more sane than he is and had a slightly better sense of how to, you know, how to control the propaganda machine that they were running. And I think he has shown there's a possibility that North Koreans don't take to him forever, because he might push them too far.
I was going to say. Like, there are, you know, obviously, like you said, people have prepared their whole lives for this. Obviously, I'm sure he has at least attempted to surround himself with people who only think the same thing that he does because he's just been killing people who don't.
Right.
But there has to be like some old military person there.
Maybe
that is,
not.
That, or maybe not.
It's but been like, going, no, but I think
there, like somebody there is, has to be like, we're not trying to be turned into a parking lot by the Americans.
Well, and
like,
that's there is not, a degree to which,
and that's what would happen.
Propaganda, I mean, doesn't work necessarily in his favor if the thing that they fear happening happens.
Right.
Because, and I think that also to some degree, there is a world in which he is not a stable leader in the way that his father and grandfather were, where they're gods there. And he's a god, supposedly.
Supposedly.
But he's so fucking nuts. I think there is a world in which you can be too nuts to be god.
Right.
You know? I think there's a world in which people might think, I know that I have to support this guy, but do we think he's a little unfit? I don't know. Like, that minor sort of, like, creeping concern can be very problematic when you're about to have sort of life and death consequences come into play.
Totally.
I think people in North Korea, like, probably love talking about how prepared they are and don't have an understanding of how much more powerful we are.
Hell don't want it to happen.
They don't want it to happen.
They don't know what
it is.
They wouldn't know
what it is.
We have an understanding of what the consequences would be.
Right.
No, and they're entirely
dependent on state-controlled media that has been feeding them disinformation their entire lives.
I don't think that it's as uncrackable as it used to be. They have consumer products coming in from China. They have smartphones. There is, I'm sure, a black market for pop culture items. South Korea loves to balloon drop, you know, soap operas and
DVDs
shit and DVDs over there.
Over there
and cookies and things.
Yeah.
But I mean, I don't think that they know as little. I think that the ideology is as sort of strict as we think it is.
Yeah.
I don't think it's the same thing as doing this 50 years ago, though. Mm. I don't think that it would. I just because people have gone their whole lifetimes at this point with nothing happening, including with South Korea, really.
Yeah.
Like, even the
issues
with South Korea didn't turn out. They're all false, you know.
Yeah.
Things.
Their worldview
that's
is
very
from
small.
These little fragments that get dropped in. They don't have a coherent understanding of the larger picture.
Yeah.
And the people who do have an understanding of a larger picture,
I would contend they
have their hand on the button.
There are no people there with a view of the larger picture, because even the people who have access to the outside world are living in a weird world where they think they're gods.
Well,
like,
true.
They don't have a perspective either, really. Probably. He thinks probably that he's undefeatable. Because he's got.
No, he knows he's not.
Well, he's not, because he got his brother killed. In that exciting.
I know.
They love an old fashioned spy killing.
Yeah,
they
do. He would rather go down fighting than lose control.
I would contend he is the one North Korean leader. He's a gluttonous asshole. I don't think he would rather go down fighting than lose control.
He would rather
than he lose control.
Which isn't going to happen.
Which isn't how it works.
Right. No, it's not.
So, I think. I don't know. Not that I know what to do about North Korea. I just feel like with a place like North Korea where you have a crazy unstable person, it's better not to poke the bear and just stall. And if they're not going to stop developing nuclear weapons anyway, I don't see how it helps if we provoke them into using the nuclear weapons.
Sure.
You know, like if they if they launched an offensive attack, the country would be razed immediately. It's not like we can't nuke them.
Right. Yes.
Like, you know, I mean,
right, of course.
They maybe don't know that, but I'm sure they know that.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, it's not like they can't be destroyed immediately. It's, we don't need to provoke them into destroying us.
And it's not that Donald Trump would have any trouble deploying nuclear weapons.
No, certainly not him.
I think he would love to.
The calculation they're making is that we wouldn't.
Right. And I would contend that maybe us having a crazy leader, the one benefit would be that they might be like, maybe they would.
Yes.
We
that's
don't
what
know.
Yeah, that's
yeah,
what
that's
I think.
I don't think that it does us any favors to go in offensively ever in that situation. I don't think that even saying that does us any favors, because I think it provokes them to do something that will end up being terrible for us.
Like, they are already probably worried about Trump being a wild card crazy person without Rex Tillerson being like, we'll bomb
we
you.
Might bomb you too.
right.
Like, that's like, we don't need. It's,
we don't need that. That's overkill.
Yeah, it's overkill. We don't have to be so melodramatic.
No,
for God's sakes.
God.
In any case, we don't have much on this, but there is a fascinating Bloomberg report about following the money that you were reading today. I'm just pointing to my dad. That is about Trump's business interests with Russia, and maybe points to a a little bit of why he's so interested.
There's a certain economic relationship that appears to be there.
Yeah.
It has to do with large numbers of Russian oligarchs buying blocks of apartments in Trump buildings and then investing in them.
Mm-hmm. And sanctions don't do such great things for the finances of those investors.
Right. The sanctions have made it more difficult, combined with, of course, world oil price drops.
Mm-hmm.
They have made it more difficult for these people to invest in the Trump buildings, which have perhaps...
Maybe he has a personal economic interest in
financial stress
in being the president,
in
having effect over the policy,
yes,
and how we deal with Russia.
And maybe they have something on his investments, since a lot of them seem to be involved in the kind of financial dealings that we would normally consider to be money laundering and criminal enterprise.
Mm-hmm. famous rich person enterprises.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Something that Donald Trump has never really had a problem with.
No, exactly. That's true. He's famous for his friendships with mobsters and other criminals far and wide.
Certainly don't have a problem with that.
No, definitely not.
If anyone has ever had less of a problem,
I would be interested to hear who that person is, and I would love you to tweet that.
Yeah, tell us.
On a semi-related note, Paul Manafort is wanted for questioning in Ukraine right now.
One of the three or four campaign managers, if you don't remember who Paul Manafort is.
A corruption investigation.
So that's fun.
Yeah.
Here's some good news. According to Fox News, which is, you might remember, a news organization that already has an agenda.
Oh, right.
There's very little that's more popular in this country than Planned Parenthood.
Mm, yes.
There's only one thing.
One thing. And
that
one
tops
thing only.
Planned Parenthood in
the
terms
man,
of wonderfulness.
The myth, the legend.
It's not Donald Trump.
It's Bernie Sanders.
It's your friend Bernie Sanders.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did a list of people with the highest of things where they were asking people about their approval rate, you know, their
approval
of different things that included Obamacare and Trump and Mike Pence and whatever. The finishers in order were Sanders with 61% approval. Planned Parenthood with 57% approval, Obamacare with 50% approval, Pence with 47% approval, and Trump with 44% approval. That also, though, he had 44% approval and 53% unfavorable view.
Right, because you were asked to give both.
Yeah, and so and some of these other people had extra low, so, you know, so there not only was Planned Parenthood had 57% favorable reviews, I guess, or favorable
reviews.
Views.
Yeah.
And then 32%
this
unfavorable.
It's like the Rotten Tomatoes of politics.
Exactly.
That's what this is.
But you'll notice that Bernie Sanders and Planned Parenthood have the same disapprove rate.
Yeah.
But he had a higher approval rate because he's that good.
He's that good.
I love that Obamacare also has a higher approval rate than Mike Pence, who obviously has a higher approval rate than Donald Trump. But Mike Pence is the only one who makes it into the top four. And it's like under Planned Parenthood, Obama, and Bernie Sanders.
God, they
what
hate
a world,
that.
You guys.
Yeah.
What a world. This is a Fox News poll again, if we haven't said that enough.
Yeah.
They polled 1,008 registered voters, and it was conducted between March 12th and 14th, so it's pretty recent.
Yep.
There were not a lot of people approving of Trump's job as president either. Only 43% approved of that, 51% disapproved.
Sure.
Who are
those 43, by the way?
30% strongly approved and 45% strongly disapproved. More of the disapproved strongly than approved strongly.
Right.
I feel like the people that approved
were just doing it because
they wanted to stick it to us.
I was going
to
say, they knew that that's what they were supposed to say.
Yeah, they wanted to stick it.
Yeah.
But also, interestingly, is that they were asked if Trump was to do one thing during his presidency and one thing only, what would you want it to be?
I like this.
33% said create jobs.
Wow.
23% said Islamic State.
Okay.
10% said cut taxes.
Oh, interesting, because that's what he seems most
obsessed with. That's all he's interested in doing. Well, there's a few things he's interested in doing, and most of them are at the bottom of this list. 9% said repeal and replace Obamacare.
Wow.
These people, though, again, are probably thinking he means replace with the plan he promised them where everyone gets insurance.
Yes.
3% want to reduce federal regulations, and only 3% want to build a border wall. I'm pretty sure that even his voters thought he was speaking in metaphor about that.
Right.
I don't think anyone thought we should definitely literally build a wall.
Do they understand metaphor, though?
Like, no, obviously not. Think of who they were.
I know.
They're not famous for their love of irony and metaphor.
I know.
They are famous for their love of Sarah Palin, and she has a love of metaphor that is not to be, and irony, that is not to be surpassed.
Yeah.
Our poet laureate, Sarah Palin. So that means that the only place that Bernie Sanders really remains unpopular is mostly with the DNC.
Yeah, that's right.
That's who's mostly anti-Bernie at this point.
Yes.
Tom Perez has been naming members of his transition team.
Yeah.
And it's mostly party insiders and establishment folks. Except for Pramila Jayapal.
Yeah. Yeah, you know they added more.
Did they? Because,
yes,
because people were like, fuck you?
Over the weekend, yes, they added. Oh, like, I miss this. Yes, they added. Well, and he always claimed that, like, the list wasn't complete or something. But, like, yes, there were only, yeah, there were 29.
He started the list with only party insiders.
There were 29, yeah, there were 29 people on it, and only two supported Ellison.
Yes.
In that
and
actual race.
And only
one of them had supported Bernie Sanders.
That was Pramila.
Right. And so, like, everybody on the left was like, hello? Yeah.
Like
what
we're
is
just
wrong
gonna run with,
you?
With the same fucking assholes.
Yeah,
that we've...
exactly. There's... Like, what could they possibly find out? By the way, like
no.
They're not. They don't. They're still refusing to think that anything went wrong.
No, exactly. And well, and interestingly, part of their sort of they now are starting a panel called the Unity Reform Commission that is about not they're not it's not the postmortem I was hoping for.
Right.
But it is a panel charged with studying ways to increase party accountability and reform the nominating process. On that panel, Sanders gets to name 7 commissioners, Clinton gets to name 9, and Perez gets to name 3, which I would contend is going to be Clinton people. That's 12 for Clinton.
Exactly.
But at least they're doing that. But this list is also, there's like some bizarre things on. Like, D. Ray McKesson is on this list.
Yeah.
Which he's so interesting because he gets a lot of like flack because he's one of the BLM sort of like voices.
Yeah.
But he's kind of a showboater a little bit. He likes to be in front of the camera and he likes to participate in these traditional, you know, sort of like politics forums. He's been to panels that where he was paid by Wells or that were paid for by Wells Fargo and things like that. You know, like he kind of, and so it's sort of, I feel like, I mean, we should have racial justice advocates on this list. I'm not trying to suggest that otherwise, but it was like they even chose the Hillary Clinton of the BLM community.
Right.
Maybe the rest of them were just like, fuck you.
Yeah.
I maybe would have been if like Patrice Cullors was probably like, fuck all of you.
Yeah.
But I feel like that's an interesting
thing.
But they it's like Jennifer Granholm.
Yeah.
Get her out of there. Right. What the hell, man?
I like her because she's like good television.
She is.
You know, and Leah Daughtry, who was the CEO of the convention last year. She's the person who kicked all the Sanders delegates out.
Yeah.
Like, don't put her on the panel.
No, don't.
She's also just like an insider from way back that like no one's interested in having near this process
all the
every
losing,
fucked up election that you can imagine.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All the losing DNC chair candidates are on it.
Yep. Yeah. And so in any case, it's, I feel like I found a symbolic paragraph in the story that I was reading about this, which was from Huffington Post, that kind of shows why everything's gone wrong. It's about one of the appointees, Zerlina Maxwell.
Zerlina.
Who is the director of progressive programming at Sirius XM.
Huh?
It says she rejected critics' suggestions that the committee did not include enough figures from the progressive movement. I don't think that my progressive credentials could be questioned, said Maxwell, who was also the director of progressive media for Clinton's presidential campaign.
Oh, God.
I feel like that kind of sums up everything.
Yes.
It's like when Hillary Clinton kept calling herself a progressive because she likes progress. And I was like, you know very well that's not what the term refers to.
Right, exactly. She's a progressive who gets things done.
It's like being a Republican because you like Republicans. Like, that's not a thing. That's not what being a Republican stands for.
Yes.
I'm a Democrat because I like democracy. We all fucking like democracy. Call it Jesus Christ.
I know.
We all like progress. That's not what being a Democrat is.
Yeah.
In any case, so we'll see what happens with this Unity Reform Commission because that's kind of the last holdout of hope for the Sanders wing.
But they did add more Sanders people to this. They're still wildly outnumbered.
Why are we having to fight every step of the way?
Sense. I know.
He's the most popular man in Fox News' America right now.
I know. But you know what? I think,
mean, on a list of candidates that they suggested.
Here's
I realized that wasn't scientific.
Here's why I think that they are still like remaining to be surprised like every time they do something like this and then figure out that we're watching.
I know.
Because that's the thing. Like, first off, nobody until now, and we've talked about this on the podcast, ever even cared about the race
DNC
for DNC
race,
chair anyway.
No.
So I think that they were all sort of like surprised we cared about that.
Yeah.
And now,
it's like,
now I think they're surprised we care about this.
Right. So and they're suddenly like,
to,
oh,
I think
God,
they're going
we'll
to continue to be surprised yeah. until maybe at some point they won't be.
Well, there was a great quote.
I think that they just don't. They're shocked that we learned about this.
Yeah. There was a great quote from Winnie Wong, who runs People for Bernie Sanders, and I think used to be a reporter or something, or she was an activist. I don't know. I've been following her on Twitter for a long time, sure. So she's obviously somebody. But so she said something like, you know, they continue to be like sort of pushing, you know, Bernie people out of the sort of structures of power here, but like we're the ones with grassroots energy and we're whatever. You know, she's talking about that, and yeah. she says, and we'll just be over here quietly running the internet while they do this.
Right. Exactly. Like, yes. I know.
Basically, that's it.
Totally.
They want to do outreach to us. You know, you got to find the people who are quietly running the internet.
Right.
You don't know any of them. They're not on this committee.
No, they're
you know?
Not.
Like,
they're there. They no. exist.
Yeah. But it's not these.
You could have put them on the committee.
It's very easy.
Yeah.
They have a lot of followers. They're easy
oh,
to find.
Oh, boy.
So yeah. in any case, the DNC continues to be hopeless.
Yeah.
And then also the Republicans continue to be hopeless because now Congress has passed a law called the Veterans Second Amendment Protection Act.
Yes.
Which allows suicidal veterans to get access to guns more easily.
Sure. Yeah,
it's also a way of reducing healthcare costs.
I know, I made that joke too. I was like, well, it will be cheaper for the
yes,
VA when all the suicidal veterans kill themselves.
Yeah,
it won't be happier.
No.
For the VA or America.
No,
it's not a nice way to honor the service of the yeah. people that. In any case, and this some Democrats voted for this too, but it basically makes it easier for veterans who have been deemed mentally incapacitated or mentally incompetent. Or people who suffer from blackouts
sure.
to acquire guns.
This is the second bill we've passed that allows
crazy people
to get guns.
Yeah. The VA normally adds, if they feel that you are unfit to have a gun, adds your name to the background check, the federal background check system, so that as a person who might harm yourself or others, you are not
yeah.
given access to the weapon with which to do that. They have consistently found that people are more likely to commit suicide when they have access to an easy way to do it.
I'm shocked
like a gun.
By this news.
Otherwise, because it's a compulsive act. And
yeah.
otherwise, you might just be like, it's going to be too hard to kill myself. I'll just
yeah.
go on living.
Yeah.
Like, literally, that is what happens with suicide people.
Yes.
Is they're like, well, it seems like it's going to be a pain in the ass to
yeah.
kill myself, so I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
It's literally that easy. So in any case, we're just handing an easy kill
yeah.
switch
yeah.
to millions, not millions, thousands, hundreds
yeah.
of thousands of people.
They're going to be shocked when the suicide rate goes up.
Shocked. Well, they're especially going to be... shot in 2014, they had an average of 20 former soldiers killing themselves each day. I feel like they're going to be shocked when just like the soldier death rate, the sort of veteran death rate goes up.
Yeah.
And they'll probably spend years being like, we don't know why this has happened.
No.
Even though, but I mean, also this hasn't passed the Senate yet. So we don't actually know
true.
If this is
yeah.
why this will happen.
Well, there's enough terrible
but there's
Democrats,
enough terrible Democrats there.
This, probably
yeah,
Joe
Second
Manchin
Amendment
is
Democrats.
Licking his chops at this sucker.
And probably Michael fucking Bennett because he can't do anything right.
God,
I'm really angry at Michael Bennett. For a reason that turned out to be not relevant. I was angry at him at the start of this podcast.
Oh, yeah.
For something we turned out not
sure
turned out not to
be
a thing.
He's still catching some flack for this, but he's introducing Neil Gorsuch tomorrow at the...
Right. That's a thing that people
right.
do for
but apparently
someone
both
from their state.
Senators
right.
from Colorado are doing it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm going to sort of give him a pass.
I'm never giving him
I'm
a pass.
I'm still somehow not happy about it, but
yeah.
I mean...
Yeah.
Anyway.
Screw him.
Yeah.
Speaking of guns...
Yeah.
Did you ever hear the story about how Sean Hannity pulled a gun on Juan Williams?
Oh.
On air.
Yeah.
First of all, the hilarious thing about this story is that it's a CNN story that is mostly about Sean Hannity calling people jackasses on Twitter.
Yeah.
There's a whole section that is just a long description of his predilection for calling people jackasses
yeah.
on Twitter. The people he's called jackasses, they name and include the Wall Street Journal columnist who called him the dumbest anchor on Fox News, the forensic psychologist who suggested a blood vessel had popped inside his brain. And the conservative MSNBC host who sometimes criticizes President Donald Trump. Like, this was a funny article for many reasons. And also because it noted that he is more, that of the 21 people he called a jackass in the last year, nearly half were between 9 p.m. and 2 a.m.
Yeah.
So he and Trump have a lot in common because they're tweeting
yeah.
angry thoughts at midnight.
Yeah.
But so apparently, you know, he considers these Twitter arguments that he gets into entertainment.
Yes.
But his version of entertainment can get
a gun
more extreme.
One of your coworkers.
Yeah. He had a very spirited on-air argument with
mm-hmm.
Juan Williams, who gets brought on to Fox News to have a spirited argument with, because
right.
he's a liberal commentator.
Yeah.
And Hannity pulled out a gun and pointed it at him.
Yes.
Three sources verified that this happened, so this is not just like some
yeah.
random hearsay from random person.
He even turned the laser on. So there was a red dot bobbing around on
yeah.
Juan Williams' body.
So, surprise, surprise, some of his colleagues brought this incident to Fox HR.
Yeah.
Nothing happened.
Nah.
Fox News released a statement that said Sean Hannity has been trained in firearm safety since he was 11 years old, and he has a license to carry a gun in 5 states, including New York. The situation was thoroughly investigated, and it was found that no one was put in any danger. Having a gun pointed at you is not, apparently at Fox News, considered being put in danger.
Not the same as like having to talk to a liberal.
No, that's danger.
Yeah, Juan Williams had already put Sean Hannity in danger.
Exactly.
Earlier,
he was only protecting himself.
He was protecting himself from Juan Williams' liberal views.
Totally yep.
To be fair, Williams did say that the incident got over sensationalized.
Yes.
They both referred to each other. No, they both referred to each other as great friends in their own quotes, which I feel very uncomfortable about.
No, I don't like that.
And I don't want nothing to ever do with that ever again. But it makes me wonder, like, what is the line at Fox News?
Right.
If you shoot, is that within? Yeah. Like, is it just if you can train only, the laser, but
only
you can't,
if you shoot to kill? I think. I think that's
if,
it.
If
that's
you
what
shoot
it is.
Off a foot, they're like, right. Well, he had it coming.
Right. Exactly. Yes.
And in final news,
oh,
it turns out all Canadians do know each other.
Yes.
And that includes your favorite comedic actor from the late 90s, Matthew Perry.
Matthew Perry. Right.
A.K.A. Chandler Bing from Friends. Mm-hmm. And Justin Trudeau, your dreamboat prime minister in Canada.
Yeah.
Who apparently knew each other when they were kids, as all Canadians do.
Sure.
And Perry was on Jimmy Kimmel this week and said that when he was around 12, he and a friend beat up Justin Trudeau. Which I just feel like this is the least Canadian thing I've ever heard. They call themselves
nice
Canadian? They're supposed to be polite.
Right?
Why didn't they offer to carry him home?
Right?
Jesus Christ.
They may have after they beat him up.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, that would be a very Canadian thing to do.
He did say it was out of jealousy, though.
Yeah, because Justin Trudeau was better at sports than him. Shock. Yeah. Shock of all shocks.
By the way, have you seen all of the shirtless Justin Trudeau pictures that were like making the internet rounds this week?
Duh.
I have too, maybe more than once.
Justin Trudeau is doing something. He's
going to the gym.
He's going
is what
to
he's
the
doing.
Gym a lot. Yeah, I wonder if him and Adam Schock know each other.
Oh God!
Remember when we had a Republican
dreamboat
and Paul Ryan?
Yeah,
Paul
not
Ryan,
a dreamboat, but he's
not a dreamboat.
Pretty jacked.
He's jacked, but he looks nerdy while jacked. I don't know how he's pulling that off.
I don't
he's
either.
Like the kind of guy that is compensating for something. Right. Justin Trudeau is just being a dreamboat all over the
just
place.
Being dreamy. That's right.
Adam Schock was just being a pretty idiot.
Pretty idiot. Closet homosexual.
Yeah. As proven by his casual.
Oh yeah. What was that? His
shirtless
photographer that was like traveling. Wasn't
well,
it? Didn't
no,
he have like the?
But remember. Someone we know saw him at Barry's Boot Camp.
Oh my God, I
on
about
Gay
that.
Pride Day in
yes,
West Hollywood,
right.
And he was asking, "What's going on down there?"
Get real.
Come on.
Yeah.
You came shirtless to West Hollywood on Pride Day, and you didn't know what was going on.
No.
How'd you find West Hollywood? What are you doing here?
Yeah.
Come on. Yeah. In any case, so you heard it here last.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's the news this week. Next week, we'll have more news.
Yeah. Thanks, Andy.
And in a couple of weeks, we're going to have Helen Hong, who's a comedian that's really great,
that's so
on the
exciting.
Podcast. We saw her on Bad News Live.
Yeah.
And now she's going to be on our podcast. So get ready for that.
Love it.
And we will talk to you next week.
Bye.